Falun Gong is freely practiced in at least 57 countries around the world, but they're meant to be persecuted in China. The peaceful courage of practitioners there have shocked their oppressors and moved to the kingdom of the world. While China continues to block all information, FGMTV brings you the stories you may not hear anywhere else. Hello, and welcome to FGMTV on Tuesday, June the 25th. I'm Susan Mitchell. The number of Falun Gong practitioners verified to have died as a result of mistreatment by Jiang Zemin's regime is 428. However, a new publication out of China that seems to have access to privileged information puts the actual number at over 7,000. Our top story this week. Chinese embassies in Indonesia and London, England show their utter disdain for their host governments. And some of our other stories. A CNN report on Jiang Zemin's history of bullying Western countries. Details of one of the seven deaths of practitioners reported during the last week. Putting a face to the persecuted from Canada and Sweden. A display of Falun Dafa historical photos in Durban, South Africa, and other cultural activities of practitioners in Japan, the USA, and Australia. And finally, Iceland. A small country with a large heart. Our top story. Chinese embassies demonstrate their flagrant and utter disdain for governments outside of China. In Indonesia, Falun Gong practitioners filed a lawsuit against the Chinese embassy after the embassy seriously disrupted and slandered two lawful activities, an experience-sharing conference and a parade. On Thursday, June 13, 2002, the judge of the South District State Court held court to bring the case to trial. The trial began without the Chinese embassy. They refused to attend, stating that since Falun Gong was not registered with the embassy, they would not appear in court. The judge ruled that because the Chinese embassy had not fulfilled their responsibilities, the court would reconvene again on Thursday, June the 27th. The judge also ordered that the Chinese embassy be summoned again to appear in court on that day. And in London, England, the tabling of an early day motion, or EDM, in the British Houses of Parliament is a device to draw attention to an issue and to elicit support for it by inviting other members of Parliament to add their signatures to the motion. One UK MP mailed the following letter to a practitioner. Please find enclosed a copy of the early day motion tabled by Dr. Lynn Jones concerning the Chinese Embassy's policy of ignorance towards MPs' letters concerning the plight of Falun Gong practitioners. I am optimistic that this will draw a reply from the Chinese ambassador to the letters he has received from hundreds of members of parliament, including me, and has so far failed to respond to. 31 MPs have already signed the EDM. The member of parliament's name has been withheld to prevent the Chinese embassy from sending out more of their defamatory propaganda. Is there another diplomatic mission in the world so impolite as to refuse to reply to correspondence from the government of the country who is their host? Moving now to Australia, where citizens in Brimbank celebrated Falun Dafa Day on June the 15th. The mayor of the city of Brimbank opened the proceedings, warmly welcoming everyone to attend. He spoke with words that cherished the principles of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance, and the unity of all cultures. And over to Tokyo, where on June the 22nd, practitioners were invited to participate in a Pray for World Peace concert. The concert was one of the events organized by the World Christian League's first World Christian Peace Conference, held to commemorate the joint hosting of the 2002 World Soccer Cup in Japan and Korea. Artists from Japan, Korea, China, and other countries gave performances. From Japan, we go to Philadelphia, USA, where on June the 7th, a one-week Journey of Falun Dafa photo exhibition opened at the Horton Gallery near the famous Liberty Bell. Over 1,000 people attended. A CNN report on Jiang Zemin's history of bullying Western countries. On June the 19th, 2002, Willie Wo Lap Lam, CNN's senior China analyst, posted an article describing Jiang Zemin's visit to Iceland as his waging big bucks diplomacy. CNN is just one of the many media outlets around the world that reported on China putting Iceland in a difficult position. Mr. Lam wrote that the Chinese Communist Party leadership first demonstrated what its critics called bullying tactics in 1997, when Denmark was bold enough to move a resolution slamming Beijing's treatment of dissidents and ethnic minorities. At that time, a spokesman of the Chinese Foreign Ministry said, quote, "This anti-Chinese resolution will, I think, in the end, become a rock that smashes on the Danish government's head," end of quote. Beijing went on to cancel all commercial contracts with the Scandinavian nation. A year later, Copenhagen and quite a few other European capitals apparently wised up. Since then, Mr. Lam reported, the CCP administration has dangled supposedly lucrative trading and investment prospects to achieve a plethora of goals. For how much longer can the world's countries continue to put money ahead of people? Details of one of the 7 deaths of practitioners reported in the last week. Falun Dafa practitioners in China report that practitioner Gui Shunhua, who lived in Xinhe Village, Shaoqi Town in Huangmei County of Hubei Province, was tortured to death while detained at the Zhejiang City Police Department on June 1, 2002. He was a village accountant and had been kidnapped on March 11, 2002 by police personnel from Shaoqi Town and Zhejiang City Police Departments. When he refused to cooperate, several police officers beat him in broad daylight with many witnesses. His wife, who is also a practitioner, tried her best to resist the police and was also brutally beaten. The police took him to the Zhejiang City Police Department and interrogated and illegally detained him. He died of torture on June 1, 2002, and his body was taken home. At the time he was kidnapped, he weighed almost 200 pounds, but at the time of his death, he was little more than skin and bones, and his body was in a completely wretched state. For 2 days, while Gui Shunhua's body was laid out in his home, police surrounded the house and no one was allowed entry to pay their respects. Police then removed his body and cremated him without the family's permission. No practitioners were allowed to attend the funeral. Putting a face and a name to the persecuted. Every week, we announce the number of practitioners known to have died as a result of mistreatment by Chinese authorities who have violated their country's constitution by persecuting Falun Gong. Here are 3 more faces of the persecuted. Amnesty International has just issued an appeal as follows. In December 2000, Li Jihe, a senior civil engineer with the Construction Ministry of the Chinese government, was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for his peaceful activities as a member of Falun Gong, a spiritual practice combining Chinese Qigong exercises, meditation, and moral teachings. His wife, Li Jiang, is a permanent resident in Canada. The Canadian government had already issued the necessary papers for Mr. He and Ms. Jiang to immigrate to Canada. After unsuccessful attempts to appeal for her husband's release and under the threat of detention herself, Ms. Jiang made the difficult decision to travel to Canada alone. And a Swedish practitioner writes, "After the persecution started, I often wondered what happened to the friends that I met during my 3 visits to China. Are they still cultivating? Have they suffered from torture? Are they still alive? Why are such good people being persecuted? I remember especially well one young man that I met every year. Since July 1999, I've been wondering how he and his wife are doing. Recently, I saw the picture of a family on Clear Wisdom, and under the picture it said, 'Child is missing her mother.' It was them, my Chinese friends." In December 1997, practitioners from many countries celebrated Christmas Eve together with the Chinese practitioners. At my table, there was a man that I recognized. It was that young man who led the FA study group in which I'd taken part the previous year. His name was Lin Chen Tao, and he was a scientist. Later, we had shared experiences at our hotel together with practitioners from different countries. I was very glad when Lin proudly presented his wife. They had recently married. She was that helpful, smiling woman I had met in 1996. I have now heard that he's been tortured so severely in Tuan He labor camp that he has become mentally disabled. His wife, Zhang Xiaojie, a music teacher, is now suffering in a female labor camp. Meanwhile, their 2-year-old daughter is missing her parents. The Swedish practitioner continues, Lin Chantel and his family have been torn apart. Sadly to say, there are many, many others who have suffered like this, and it makes my heart bleed. Moving now to South Africa, practitioners around the world have held large photographic exhibitions of the history and evolution of the spread of Falun Dafa. On June 17, 2002, such an exhibition opened for a 2-week showing at the Menzi Malunu Gallery in the city of Durban, South Africa. The local people thus obtained the opportunity to explore Falun Dafa, try the exercises for themselves, and learn the truth of the persecution of practitioners in China by the Jiang Zemin regime. Many of the visitors were happy to sign the petition condemning the persecution. Jiang Zemin's hired cheering squad could not block the view. Falun Dafa practitioners who went to Iceland managed to legally lift their banners very prominently in this photograph as the Chinese president drives past on his way to the airport, beating a hasty retreat from the country whose people so openly condemned their government's initial decision to block entry to practitioners. The small group with the red and white banners were a cheering squad hired by the Chinese government, who, obviously unsuccessfully, tried to block the Chinese president's view of the much larger, brighter Falun Dafa group of banners and people. And finally, Iceland, a small country with a big heart. Paul Lin in the Taipei Times was another journalist who reported on the Iceland scandal, saying in part, the Chinese Communist Party may have effectively trampled upon international human rights, but in the end, Beijing's actions only helped publicize the Falun Gong's cause. On June the 13th, the day of Zhang's arrival, 450 Icelandic legislators and other notables published 4 full-page newspaper advertisements with the word sorry emblazoned in Chinese characters at the top of the page. The next day, on June the 14th, local human rights groups organized an anti-Zhang demonstration in Reykjavik that attracted about 1,000 people. Given that Iceland has a total population of about 250,000, getting 1,000 people to protest is no small feat. Falun Dafa practitioners took these photographs of the Icelandic protesters who sealed their mouths with black fabric to let their government know that their democratic rights had been violated. Over the few days that the small country of Iceland became the focus of world concern, many people came to learn the exercises, and many new friendships were formed. Thanks for watching SKM TV, dedicated to breaking through China's information blockade, revealing propaganda, and bringing you the truth of Falun Gong.